This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live.
Good evening. I'm Amanda Kinsley-Smith. Thank you for joining me on the Sunday Late Late Show on Teachers Talk Radio. It's Sunday, the 10th of March, 2024, and for the first time tonight, I have two guests, Johnny Mulholland, an English teacher and head of year, and Neil Dillon, an ICT teacher. Both men teach in a post-primary school here in Northern Ireland, and we'll be talking about how different teachers can both learn from and support each other.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and you are listening live. Tune in live at ttradio.org, or to join in the conversation, download the Podbean app and search Teachers Talk Radio. Follow the hashtag TTRadio. Tune in, talk it out with Teachers Talk Radio.
Okay, welcome to the show. As I said, I will hopefully be joined by not one but two guests tonight, so wish me luck because I haven't done that before. I can see one's already here, Johnny, thank you.
Hello.
Hello. Oh, you're a wee bit loud. Johnny, can you move your mic back a touch for me?
How about now?
Little bit loud still. I'd move back a wee bit more again if you could.
Hello.
Hello, and there's Neil has joined us now as well. Hi, Neil.
Hello. It would have been a bit embarrassing if a teacher couldn't have sorted out the technology there. So.
I mean, I wasn't going to say anything, Neil, but yeah, if the ICT, you would have been letting the ICT crowd down, quite frankly, if you weren't able to join. Johnny's English, and he got in straight away. So
points for me already. Amanda, do I sound all right?
Yeah, you're still maybe a wee touch loud, but you're fine. We can hear you nice and clearly, which is the important bit.
Great. I can't put my phone any further away, so I think it's just my booming voice at this point.
Your booming voice at this point. Well, do you know what? That's something that we'll have to cultivate as teachers. So if you've got your booming voice, that's not a bad thing. So I'll just introduce you a little bit and then we'll get started. So Johnny's been teaching English for 14 years. I think I've got that right, Johnny.
And
is a pastoral leader as head of year 12, which is year 11 in other parts of the UK. So the final GCSE year. And then Neil, you're at the beginning of your career. This is, I think, your second year as an ICT teacher. Isn't that right?
Yeah, so I've just been a teacher about a year and a half. So you're right, just into my second year. So I'm quite at the start.
Okay, so different points there, but you're now both in the same school. So we're going to be chatting about maybe some of the similarities, some of the differences in your teaching experiences. And then most importantly, really the whole point of tonight is to talk about some of the things that you've learned from each other and how as teachers we can all do this and maybe look out for each other a bit more, because it's so important in actually getting people to stay in teaching, because it can be quite isolating at times, really. So if we start off, Johnny, we'll start off with you. What made you maybe want to get into teaching in the first place?
I'm probably going to sound a bit cheesy and very cliche here, but it was a love of subject for me, certainly. And also I had some great teachers. When I was in school, I just loved to write, loved to read. Was just working with language really did something for me, being able to express yourself through words. For me, really, once I'd got into sixth form, I had the most wonderful A-level English teacher, and I'll never forget studying the poetry of Robert Frost with her. She took us through some of Arthur Miller's plays, and particularly something like Death of a Salesman, really sort of sticks in my mind. And a real geek, I suppose, in the sense that I could not wait. I could not wait to go to A-level English class. And I think for me, it was just the idea that you could just take so much meaning from something somebody else had written, and understanding that somebody had poured their heart or their emotions into this. I ended up in loving Frost so much that in university I went on to write my dissertation about him. Just sitting there with Arthur Miller's Death of a Salesman in front of you and reading about Willie Loman and his tragic life. And, you know, the lines still stick with me. His wife talks about what goes through a man's mind having driven 700 miles home without having earned a cent. If you're familiar with the play, that will make sense. If not, it doesn't matter. But and I just connected with something in the literature, connected to something in the literature that I was reading. A lot of Robert Frost poems, explore things such as meaning and purpose, and it's all very lofty. I'm being a typical English teacher here, but it really is. And one of my favorite Frost poems was my teacher took us through the Star Splitter, which was all about this guy who, he was a bit aloof. He felt like a bit of an alien. People kind of scoffed at him and laughed at him. He lived on the edge of society, but he was obsessed with the stars. And in the poem, he ends up burning down his house for insurance money to buy what is a star splitter. It's the name of the telescope. And he talks about what we're put here on Earth for is to see. And the strongest thing that's given to us to see with the telescope. And it talks about in one stroke of a match, he just changes his life. And, you know, I just can remember sitting in the classroom at 18 years old. Just, I was transfixed by this. It just spoke to me. It moved me. I think it was the fact that you go to history, you learn lots of facts. You go to geography and it's, you know, very factual and science, maths, you know, there was something for me that was different about English, that it was, it challenged me. I can't explain it. I had this emotional link with it. So good teachers and a love of English. And I thought, hey, there's something in this. I could get paid to work with something that I love every day, and maybe even along the way make a kid feel the way my teacher made me feel. And so I just thought, let's go with it. I also really never get any careers advice, to be honest, in school that much. But maybe that was for the best, because once I had that connection with the feeling of I could work with a subject that I love and maybe inspire something in other kids, and that was it. And I just committed to it and went for it.
I bet that would mean the world to your sixth form English teacher. Genuinely, think about it, like if he or she knew that they'd had that impact. Because that
maybe
might,
she's listening that tonight.
Maybe she is, but you know, that could be the 100th time she'd taught that poem. You know, she didn't realize it was having such a life-changing impact.
Yeah, I know. I think sometimes I question, is that quite weird that I was so young and actually was drawn to often what were quite dark, you know, topics, but...
Yeah, I was going to say Death of a Salesman and Robert Frost. You went down the cheery route early.
Yeah, so there you go. Maybe I should also be blaming my English teacher for, anyway, but I think it was just the emotional aspect. It challenged me. It made me think about life. It made me think about what I wanted out of life. You know, yeah. It was all about that. So that's why I got into teaching.
Okay. And Neil, does any of that resonate with you? Was it teachers or things that you really enjoyed in school that made you want to go down the teaching route yourself?
Well, I have to say, I feel like I'm a bit out of depth here talking about poems and all that kind of stuff. I'll definitely not be talking about any poems around the cat. So I'll probably be a typical ICT teacher here to get straight to the point. Just really from my earliest days in school myself, I just always really liked ICT and was really interested in it. And I've remained fascinated by sort of the latest developments. You know, I suppose the latest one is AI and the potential to improve the quality of our life. And I sort of like the freedom that teaching gives you. Like I'll be able to see something the night before and then be able to start teaching it in my class. And I sort of like the idea of showing pupils new things that they wouldn't have ever seen before in any other classroom. So I really, really like that. And then just in terms of being a teacher, just as I was getting towards the end of my university, my sister she's also a teacher. And she was just sort of saying how she really, really enjoys it. So she sort of inspired me a wee bit just to go for it. So I sort of have to thank her, I suppose, or not thank her, I should say.
And does she teach a similar subject or the same sort of age level as you?
She teaches chemistry, actually, so she's probably a wee bit smarter than me, I'd say.
You've just insulted ICT teachers across the
She teaches secondary school as well, so anytime I need help, she's always there to give me advice, which is good, especially for me being at the start of my career. She's been teaching for about 5 or 6 years now, so it's good to have something to lean on as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. Johnny, are there any other teachers in your family?
Yeah, that's funny. You know, that Neil would mention that. My sister is also a teacher, so now I feel like a rubbish brother that I didn't acknowledge that. But she's actually a primary school teacher. And so, to be honest, she and I have always both felt like we have completely different jobs. And so we actually don't often even talk about work, you know, and that's one thing. The love of subject definitely did drive me forward, because At no point did I ever think I could deal with teaching children as young as that. So my sister, you know, listen, she's there if I ever want to moan or rant. But yeah, over the years, we've really established that her day-to-day in a primary school is just so completely different. She would probably try and tell me that I have it a bit easier than those in the primary sector. So
it's just, my brain's now thinking, because I know that we're going to be moving on to talk about similarities and differences. It's quite funny. I didn't realize that there's both of you with sisters already in teaching, or, you know, in teaching as well, the same. I'm just now wondering if there's something in that where we kind of do go down similar routes that we've seen before. Johnny, have you been then in a big range of schools as you've been teaching for longer?
Yeah. So, the school I'm in at the minute, I've been there now almost 10 years. I had no expectation at the start, to be honest, that I would end up being there 10 years. I always saw myself as a person who would maybe move around a bit more. But I've been in three schools. The first one, obviously in Northern Ireland, you know, we still very much have a very sort of strong selective system. So the first school I was in was non-selective. It was an integrated school. The second school, then I moved into the selective sector and it was all boys. And then the school I'm in now is all girls. So I do feel like I've had quite a lot of experience in the different types of schools. I mean, something I'll probably talk about later, you know, just the big culture shock when moving school. And certainly moving from an all boys environment to an all girls remains probably the biggest culture shock and challenge that I've experienced in teaching. And you know, I'm conscious of, you know, veering into gender stereotypes, but my experience is that an all boys school environment is incredibly different from an all girls environment. And that was something I actually would say I struggled with quite a bit at first. Yes, and the first school that I was in, you know, shiny and new, 22 years old, it was tough, and it was tough in terms of establishing myself and managing behaviour. So I would say, though, my PGCE had prepared me somewhat for that. You know, I think back to my first lesson that I ever taught. I can remember it vividly, waiting for the bell to ring, absolutely sweating, keeping my suit jacket on, because if I took it off, my shirt was stuck to my skin. The class was an absolute disaster, and it was 2009, I think. And I purchased a tie that I thought was the height of fashion. So rather than be pointed at the end, it was sort of just flat. There was no point. Yeah. And I'll never forget standing there. This was a class that had a lot of sort of special educational needs issues as well. So literacy difficulties, and their behavior was tough. So they were static. So they did not move around school like other classes. The teacher went to them. And then just as I was about to start the lesson, a girl in the front put her hand up. And you know, her question was, what on earth had happened to my tie? Who had chopped the end of it off? And I died in that moment, and the entire class just laughed. And the next half an hour was, you know, I had my little PowerPoint prepared on sentence structure and things. And that was my first ever lesson. And honestly, for the next 30 minutes, I essentially just battled against them laughing me. They essentially laughed me out of the room. And I'll never forget it. And I honestly thought, I can't do this. But there you go. I'm still here. I'm still alive and kicking.
Yeah, here you are 14 years later. And I was expecting maybe there was going to be some sort of cutting metaphor there about, you know, the tie being pointless and making some sarky comment about the lesson. So, you know, maybe that's not too bad. Just asking who hurt you is maybe not quite so terrible. And what about you, Neil? Have you been in, obviously this is only been your second year out. Have you, I'm guessing, less of a range then in terms of types of schools that you've been in?
Yeah, so less of a range, definitely. So this is my second year, as you said. So the first year I was doing a maternity cover in school. So obviously I'd only lasted for 1 year. It was an all-girls school, quite a high-achieving school as well. And then this year I'm sort of nearly in an identical school. You know, it's all girls, very high achieving. So I don't have anywhere near as much of a range as what Johnny would. So I'm sort of interested to hear what Johnny will say in terms of his challenges from going from an all-boys school to an all-girls. You know, I'm interested to hear those kind of challenges because I only know one environment. So yeah, I'm interested to hear that.
Well, this is brilliant. We've got a little bit of a sense of the two of you and your roles, and we've already found one similarity that we weren't expecting and one difference already. So what we're going to do is we're going to have a quick pause here. We're going to go to the news, and when we come back, we're going to look in a bit more detail at some of those differences between you. So we will be back with that in just a minute.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
This is Teachers Talk Radio, and this is Teachers Talk Radio News.
This week in the news, is World Book Day a burden on parents? Has the tide turned against hyper-discipline in schools? Is Scotland going to be excluding more students? Should we be talking up the benefits of going to school at a school that is turning the clock back on mobile phones? World Book Day on March the 7th has become a fixture in the school calendar, where pupils are encouraged to come to school dressed as their favourite characters, or bring books to donate or tell their friends about. This celebration of reading, though, has become a little controversial, as reported in the BBC and The Guardian. Parents have complained of increasing pressure to buy commercialised costumes or spend time and money elaborately creating their own. Some of the pressure has a class element, with some parents sending their children to school dressed as characters from Harry Potter, while others might be the Artful Dodger. Head teacher Fran Davis from Michigan Primary School in Mountain Ash has said she wants the day to be fun without being a financial burden. Therefore, she suggests that pupils can come in their pajamas, suggesting their favourite bedtime book, or simply in school uniform, as they might be pupils at Hogwarts or even Greyfriars. If you wish to hear teachers' views on World Book Day, listen to last week's Late Show with Lucy Neuberger on Teachers Talk Radio. One of the most significant developments in education in the last few decades has been the trend towards positive discipline, or military-style discipline, in schools. And this provides the context for the next two stories this week. The first story appeared on the BBC and was covered by the Guardian newspaper. And it's about the Michaela School, led by the controversial head teacher, sometimes described as Britain's strictest head teacher, Catherine Burwell Singh, who has been in the news for the school's policy towards Muslim prayers. Half of the pupils of the school are Muslim students. Two students have given interviews where they describe a toxic atmosphere of the school and an atmosphere of fear and being stripped of their identity. If you wish to learn more of this story, you can find Tom Rogers' interview with Catherine Burwell Singh on this topic on Teachers Talk Radio. The increasing prevalence of tiger-style teaching, strict discipline methods, zero tolerance, and first-time, every-time expectations of students across British schools was highlighted when a parent at Boston Spa Academy complained her autistic son found school intolerable, as over a period of only a few days, he acquired 56 negative comments and several days in isolation. Boston Spa Academy schools have appeared frequently in Education Uncovered and other news outlets for their strict approach involving lining up for inspections and an expectation that rules will be obeyed instantly and at all times. Not for the first time, teachers' unions have described these policies as inhumane. This week, Scotland's Education Secretary, Jenny Gilruth, announced that there would be a review of Scottish Government's policy on exclusions. The number of exclusions from schools has dropped considerably in recent years, as a determined policy of avoiding school exclusion was adopted following research of a link between excluded students and later involvement in crime. However, with one-third of teachers in Scotland reporting in a survey of the EIS union that they had suffered assault or physical violence in the previous year, pressure to review the non-exclusion policy has resulted in a reconsideration. School attendance is once again in the news. A survey revealed that nearly a third, 32% of teachers and school leaders have experienced pupils being absent this academic year because of a parental dispute with the school. The survey, by Teacher Tap, asked 8,411 teachers and leaders in state schools in England in January what reasons they had been given for pupils missing school this academic year, other than illness. More than half, 51%, said pupils had been kept home because they were tired after an event the night before. Nearly 9 out of 10, 87%, said wanting to take a holiday during term time was the reason, while more than 3 in 4, 76%, pointed to family events. John Camp, president of the Association of School and College Leaders, warned in a speech to the union's annual conference that the unwritten social contract between families and schools is fracturing, and he called for a change of tone in the national conversation about education to ensure that people talk up schools and colleges. And finally, another story from the BBC, where Milldown Academy in Blandford Forum head teacher Mr. Law has adopted the policy of providing brick phones, old-fashioned simple mobile phones for students. Parents can hire or borrow them as an alternative to smartphones, which are increasingly distracting in the school. You can find more discussion of these and other stories on Teachers Talk Radio or reviewed each Sunday on Teachers Talk Radio panel, which you can find the links to on YouTube or the Teachers Talk Radio site. This has been your Teachers Talk Radio news with John Gibbs.
Okay. We're moving on to think about some of the differences between your teaching experiences at the minute and up to now, maybe in your careers. What I would say I've noticed, I've been teaching now for 15 years, and things I've noticed about teachers in that time is that we are nosy. I was going to say inquisitive, but let's be honest, we're nosy. And we're magpies. We love going into other people's classrooms and seeing things and going, ooh, I could do that, or I could do something like this. Or even better, when you can get into an actual complete different school. Oh, I love having a dander around, seeing what's up in the walls, what can you see of the student work, how do they do things? Because we're always looking to see what we can change, what we can make better. There are things that we would look and go, okay, that's definitely not going to happen in my classroom, wouldn't work with my kids. But other things we can see where definitely we can see things and go, oh, I want to try that. So in thinking about the differences between the two of you, I'm really interested as well in looking to see what you could maybe pick up from each other. I was going to say despite being at different stages and in different subjects, but because you're at different stages and in different subjects, that opens up so many opportunities. So can we sort of virtually have a nosy into your classrooms if we could and sort of think about with the subject that you teach, you know, what does that kind of entail? What's your classroom set up? What's it like? Like, where do you spend most time in the classroom? Are you up at the front? What's it like being in Johnny Mulholland's classroom?
Oh, just confirm, Amanda, that you can hear me again.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Great. You know, remember, I'm the English teacher, so I might be a bit rusty here with the old tech. This is something that Neil and I have had a bit of a chat about already in school. I guess in many ways, you know, you think of our subjects as they're at the opposite end of the spectrum. And, you know, what's my classroom like? First of all, you know, I would say it's very, very teacher led. I'm going to end up critiquing myself here. I'm going to be honest. I am an English teacher who would tend to shy away from technology. you know, I even find group work stressful, you know. I'm going to point out some things here that probably, to be honest, I reflect on. And I do think I need to be open to, you know, adapting. I mean, that's what teaching's all about, isn't it? We've got to be willing to move with the times. But I think I know my room's very teacher-led, and that, you know, in a sense, I'm out of my seat. Very, very rarely am I sitting at my desk. You know, I'm up, usually I'm at the front, and it's kind of, you know, like attention on me or attention on, you know, whatever it is we're reading or interrogating. One thing I would say is my room is full of questioning. You know, think about the nature of English. You know, it's all about, you know, interrogating, investigation, probing, you know, sharing ideas and feeling, asking why, asking how. And that is something that I you know, intentionally, you know, very deliberately make, you know, a big, big part of my teaching is questions. Where I maybe fall down is I'm probably not doing that in, you know, the newest style or in a maybe in a technologically advanced way. I mean, it's old school, it's me, and I'm asking the questions, or I'm encouraging the kids to ask the right questions of each other. So yeah, it's usually me at the front. I mean, I would pace around the room, but when I move around the room, I'm doing that to get into their books. So, you know, there'll be, I would try to have a balance of, you know, reading and writing in every lesson. And so when the students are engaged in some sort of writing, I'm, you know, moving around to actually, you know, look at what they're doing in that moment. And I like to try and give them sort of like live feedback, so to speak, and ask them questions, make them stop and think about what they're writing and why they're writing it, and maybe pick out a few errors and, you know, encourage them to proofread, blah, blah, blah. But I always think that if someone were to come round to my classroom, sometimes I have a bit of a panic about, would they find it maybe very traditional? Would they think that it's maybe lacking in innovation? But to be honest, I just like to bury my head in the sand over some of those big innovative things that are coming our way. And so what if I were to say, if there's something absent in my room, it is technology. Now, I mean, I'm not completely useless. So Neil's probably rolling his eyes here, but, you know, I've got a lovely fancy board, and I'm all good with the basic functions. You know, the board is there, I can write on it, I can display things. I mean, I've used my Surface Pro to move around the room and actually take snapshots of people's work in the moment and get it up on the board. And then we can, you know, we can talk about it, you know, start to correct errors or just interrogate the work that I've put on the board. Also, if I want to maybe stand somewhere else in the room, I can use my device to move whatever is on the board forward. So it can allow me to maybe go stand at a corner of the room where I think people aren't as engaged as much or whatever it might be. The pandemic brought us Microsoft Teams, and which I would say I detest. But the one function of it that I do quite like is, and they've really kept up, I would use the assignments option in Teams quite a bit. So a lot of the work, even extended written work, I'll set my class on Teams. Neil will be very proud of me for that. And one thing, it's kind of selfish though too, one thing I love about it is I find it much more accessible for me to mark. You know, I've been, you know, maybe, you know, I don't know, sitting on a bus, sitting on public transport and able to open up my phone Teams and see the actual copies of their books and mark it and give feedback, you know, rather than sort of trailing around a big pile of books. So that's actually made my life somewhat easier. And the kids also enjoy the fact that their old, you know, foggy English teacher, Mr. Mulholland, is embracing this technology. And oh my goodness, we can upload our homework online. So yeah, I mean, Neil already mentioned there about AI, and so these are then in my classroom, these are the weak areas. You know, I'm so aware that all this stuff is out there, but I would say not a lot of the time are kids using devices in my room. You know, there was a few weeks ago actually that my students were doing a task, and a girl put up her hand just before they were about to start. It was time bound, and said, you know, well, Mr. Mulholland, we need a timer on the board. You know, can you put a timer up, please? And what she meant was, you know, there's a big timer function in the board, and you can put up a big fancy clock and it does a countdown and whatever. And that's all great, and I know how to do that. But, you know, the clock, I thought to myself, but why is the clock on the wall not good enough? You know, so I know I need to maybe embrace a bit of innovation in my room, but I think even given the nature of my subject, I still want to believe that there is a value in those basics of reading and writing and putting pen to paper and actually being able to focus. without a device in your hand. And so maybe I'm trying to cling on to that. And I am sure that, you know, I'm sure I am right to an extent, but I'm willing to admit that the technology side of things in my room may be considered by some to be quite barren, I think, is a fair assessment.
I think you're being hard on yourself.
That's the story of my life.
I think you're being so hard on yourself. Like, you've mentioned all these different things that you're doing, and teachers, I'm sure, who use Teams, Google Classroom, whatever online platform their school might be using, if they have one, I'm sure they do appreciate the benefits of being able to access that marking at home and not having to bring all those books home on the bus and things. And you're doing that. And do you know what? In an exam, they're not going to have a flipping timer up there counting down for them. They're going to have to look at a clock. So I don't see anything wrong with trying to encourage them to do that. And if the only time maybe that they're sitting actually reading and writing, not on a device, could be then in school. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. You know, it's not, you're not using technology. You're using technology in the way that seems to suit you. And you sound like you are open to learning from people like Neil, who are coming in with new ideas and new tech and looking to embrace that. And I think you're being quite harsh on yourself there.
Well, you're just too kind.
I don't know. Neil, does that sound just exactly like what happens in your classroom?
No, just a wee bit different. Just a wee bit different.
Just a wee bit.
I suppose I start off with, I'm sort of lucky that in my room, every single pupil has a device. So there's 30 computers in my room. There's never going to be a pupil without a device. So unlike Johnny, you know, if he wants to use technology, they're going to have to use their phones, and that has problems in itself. Whereas if they're on their computer, you know, I can sort of monitor it and all that kind of thing. So I'm lucky that way. There's actually only one class on my timetable where I'm not in my own room, so I don't have computers. And I actually really don't like those periods because I feel lost without my computer. So it sort of shows I'm quite, like, I'm sort of nearly over-reliant on the technology, you know. So if I don't, every one of my lessons doesn't have a fancy PowerPoint, fancy Microsoft Teams worksheets, you know, Microsoft Forms, all that kind of stuff, I feel a wee bit lost, you know. And nearly every one of my lessons will be, I use this wee bit of software where I upload my PowerPoint to it, and you can add interactive questions to it. And basically, it means that the pupils in the class can interact, answer questions. I can see every single one of their screens on my screen at the front. So sometimes that means I don't even have to go down to give feedback. You know, I can just see it on their screen, and I can even reply a wee message to them and things like that. And I think it's really, really good. It sort of keeps pupils on edge because I can actually bring up a specific answer, put it on my screen. So they sort of always want to have a good answer because they know that I can put it on the board and put them on the spot and ask them to explain their answer and all that kind of thing. So that usually it works quite well that way. So yeah, quite a bit different to Johnny's. You know, I'm, like, as I said there, I'm really, really interested in the recent developments that come out of ICT nearly every day, it seems. So if I go on Twitter at night and I see a cool website or something like that an ICT teacher is using, I'll give it a go the next day to see how it goes, you know. So quite a bit different to Johnny's. But as Johnny says there, like if someone came in to observe me, they would probably say I'm a wee bit too over-reliant on technology, to be honest. So a bit of a mix, but in between me or Johnny, I think it'd be perfect.
I agree.
Do you know what, though? You're both doing this. Like, you both mentioned questioning. You both mentioned feedback. You both mentioned getting ideas from the students and sharing them. And Neil, see, to be honest, as you were talking there about how you can see from your screen what their answers are and things, I was having flashbacks of being in Queen's University, Belfast. My degree was English Literature and Spanish. And for some of our Spanish classes, we were in the, what was considered high tech at the time, computer labs, the Spanish language labs. So you'd have the computer there, you'd have your headset with, you know, the headphones and the little microphone there attached to the front so you could pretend you were in a big fancy office. And there was all these different tasks that you would do, and we would all be speaking Spanish into our microphones and it would be recording and everything. But I remember so clearly being in first year of uni when you're nervous and you don't know the people around you anyway. And it was, do you know, like pages out of a children's colouring book? Like random, like black and white random pictures that a kid would colour in, they would pop up on the screen and then you had to describe what you could see in Spanish. So it was really random vocab. I wasn't sure what, and like I remember clear as anything this picture coming up of a snail on top of a hill. And I had to talk to the computer and tried to describe this, and I was just looking, going, what the hell is the word for snail in Spanish? I have never had to use this in my life. And I was like, in Spanish, I was going, it's a small animal, and it's on a hill. I remembered hill, colina, está sobre la, I was like, yeah, it's on the hill. It's pequeñito, it's very small. Could I think of the word for snail? No. So gave it the best go, eventually went, oh, stuff it, that's as good as I can do. And the next thing I hear the tutor's voice coming through my headset going, well done, Amanda, you got most of that. And just so you know, the word for snail is caracol. That's caracol. And I was like, oh, okay. So I can tell you from the student's point of view what it's like. It really does put you on edge. See, after you know the first time, oh, here the teacher could be listening in to me or could be watching what's happening on the screen. There's no sort of clicking off and going on, well, it was MySpace back in the day. No going, you know, going off and looking at any sites or anything that you shouldn't be on. You have to focus. If you don't know, like if I'm walking around my classroom, they know where I am and whose book I'm looking at.
Yeah.
But in your room, you could be looking at any of them.
Yeah.
So you were just triggered by ICT there. It's dangerous.
Yes.
It's, I'm telling you, it's a world of fear.
Such a long time ago, but it's, yeah, there we go. But it's so useful to be able to give that live feedback. And I still remember the word all those years later. So clearly, you know, that's not a bad thing.
And I suppose it's just, it's something different for the pupils as well, you know.
Yeah.
Like they probably won't get that in too many other lessons. So it's good just giving a wee bit of variety as well. So they know they're going to get something a wee bit different than, you know, just me talking at them for an hour and 10 minutes.
Yeah.
No, Neil, there's nothing wrong with that.
No.
That's true.
I should have.
No, that was a bit. That was a bit passive aggressive of you, but whatever.
Yeah, and can I say also we've had a message in saying that Johnny is being very hard on himself. This is from a fellow teacher at the same school saying the pupils love his lessons and he's providing valuable skills and giving them a passion. So,
well, clearly I planted her in the room, but so great it worked, fabulous.
So another thing to think about then is you're at the same school, you're teaching different subjects, but obviously there are some similarities there in your approaches, different ways maybe of getting there, but you're looking at the same skills. What about in terms of the length of time that you've been there? Because Johnny, you must be really established in that school now if you've been there for 10 years. So does that affect the relationships that you have with the school community, like students, parents, other staff members? Is that different from, you know, whenever you started?
Oh God, undoubtedly. And I suppose that would be one of the biggest differences. I think, you know, Neil and I are, we both work at the same school, but that's, I mean, my goodness, for me in teaching relationships, that's it. At the core of absolutely everything. And you're right. It's something that can only come with time, you know, so there's no failing there. You know, you have to, you commit to your school and you get involved in the life of the school and time ticks by. And now I wouldn't say that part of it comes naturally, but, you know, you also do have to put in the work. You know, I think it's possible to teach in a school for many years and actually still have quite poor relationships, both with staff, pupils and parents. So It does require a level of effort. But yes, I mean, you know, maybe that's part of the reason why all of a sudden 10 years pass and you're still there, because with the establishing of relationships, in my opinion, you know, life becomes that little bit easier. You know, I said relationships are at the core of everything. Students, first of all, you know, I feel really blessed in that. I mean, this speaks to the school environment that I work in, but I pretty much have zero behavioral problems in my classroom. And that's not just because, you know, that's not just because the kids are perfect. You know, it's because I've worked over the years on getting to know the kids. And I think it's the value in that is immeasurable. And you know, I think back to even when I was a student, and even some people that I have taught with, I've been in three different schools, as you know, I have encountered people who don't put the work into relationships. It happens. And I think it's a huge mistake. You know, for me, once you establish a relationship with the pupils, that, you know, humor is, I should have said that earlier, humor is also a big part of my classroom. You know, to laugh is so, so important. And I can only utilize humor effectively because of the relationships I've established. You know, some people listening maybe might they might scoff at my talking about humour there, but you know, if you know the kids well, then you know what's appropriate. You know when irony can work or sarcasms. Again, that might not be some people's thing, that's fine, but I consider it a really powerful sort of tool in my armoury. And you know, I think the more you establish relationships, you know, the more you can actually be fair and reasonable with kids. You know, I think back to when I first started teaching, you know, I was a shouter, and I mean, you know, and I'm not proud of that. But I was, you know, I, at first to establish myself, I did a lot of raising my voice. And I mean, honestly, I barely raise my voice anymore. It's about actually talking, you know, to the kid and expressing why you're unhappy or whatever it might be. So yes, relationships and then staff, but staff and parents almost as important as the students. So, you know, once you establish relationships with some staff members, you know, what's great about that is you can share a problem with them. You can ask for advice. You know, it's, and when you start in a new school, it's so difficult. I'll speak for myself. I find it difficult to sort of make friends, so to speak, and kind of thought would sort of overthink things and what would I have in common with them and why would they want to talk to me. And you know, but as soon as you start to establish relationships with your colleagues, it's you know, it's both personal and professional. And just to even run an issue by them, or you've got an issue with a pupil, or you're not sure about how you're teaching something, or maybe you've got an awkward phone call to make with a parent, there's something really nice in just being able to say to someone and work here, what do you think about this? With parents, you know, that comes from all the parental consultations and even school events over the years, you know, and you know, you have to make the effort to engage with them. And sometimes actually there's a strategy in that, you know, engage with the parents and get them on side. So certainly for me, it's the single most important thing, I think, in being an effective teacher is, have you established solid relationships with your pupils? Do you work on those? And without it, I think I'd hate my job. I can't imagine coming in and things being quite stiff and cold. Yeah. And yeah, it wouldn't work for me. So yeah, I imagine that, you know, this is what Neil is in the process of doing, I would say, you know, and yeah, I think it's so, so important.
Yeah, and that is something that we will come back to as well, again, to look at in more detail, is that level of support and the absolute difference that it makes. And it doesn't matter whether the person who you're talking to get you, I mean, the person who you could go to for help with making a difficult phone call could be someone who had to phone that person last week, who it might be their first week in the school. It doesn't matter how long they've been there. They could have something then to teach you or to talk you through that could help you with that. So I do think that's really important. And we've had a couple of messages there from Paul. Thank you, Paul, to say he agrees. So he says, I've always said that the kids can be as tough as anywhere, but if you've a strong, friendly and supportive staff, you can survive and thrive at that school. And that everybody needs a school best, dear buddy, which I could not agree with more.
Yeah. That's really nice to hear. I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. Neil, is that then something that at the minute you are cultivating in your school?
Yeah, I 100% agree with Johnny there. I think that's one thing I definitely learned from last year. So last year, as I said, it was a bit of a unique year for me because it was my first year teaching and I was actually doing a maternity for a head department. So I was
head
the
of
only
department
person.
In your first year?
Yeah, so I was the Tough. Only person. Yeah, it was. I was the only person in the IT department. So I just remember whenever I got all my classes sat down in front of me, I just sort of got stuck straight into teaching. You know, just because I was a bit nervous myself, I was just a bit, my humour wasn't really coming across and I wasn't really coming across myself. So it definitely took me a few months to find my feet in my first year and get myself actually coming out in my teaching. So that's one thing I definitely changed this year. To start this year, I know some people might not like this, but for the first week at least, I threw the curriculum out the window and just sort of did a couple of icebreakers, all that kind of thing, just to try and get to know the pupils because, as I said, it is all about relationships. And it's just wee simple things. Like even now, if a pupil tells me they're playing hockey on a Saturday morning or something like that on a Friday, I'll try and remember that. And then on the Monday, I'll ask them about how to get on and all that kind of thing. Just trying to take an interest in them as well. And I think that really makes a difference to them, you know. Yeah. Like you can see in their face, like they're happy you're taking an interest in them outside of school. So yeah, definitely relationships massive in school.
Yeah.
Neil's spot on there, can I just say, you know, but it's as simple as that. And sometimes I think there are people out there and they miss this trick and I don't get it. You know, how easy is it to ask a kid about their weekend or, oh, you're in the hockey team or you had a footy match, and to just acknowledge that. And as Neil just said, to maybe even say then next week, how'd you get on? I mean, their day is made and then you've got them. See, for that lesson, you've got them. They're sorted because you took an interest in them. You're not going to have an issue. And I think people, if anybody underestimates that, they you shouldn't. It absolutely makes a difference.
And that could be a kid who maybe doesn't always academically do well in your class or your subject.
Yeah.
But they know that you still value them.
100%.
As a student, as a member of that class.
So maybe I could
you know, yeah, go on in.
Maybe I can ask two more experienced teachers then. How do you two go about making good relationships with your pupils and all that kind of thing?
Well, you just nailed it. Yeah. It's the simple questions and obviously always appropriate and always, you know, within the realm of professionalism, but taking an interest in their life. Also, I over the years, I would be, again, within a professional level, of course, I would maybe just share a little of myself. You know, I mean, you're a human being, you're a person, and, you know, give a little of yourself to the kids. So I wouldn't be afraid sometimes to maybe crack a joke, be self-deprecating or tell them something I did at the weekend. You know, these simple things, to be human, you know, they're teenagers, for crying out loud. You know, that to me, that just solves the problem in so many cases.
Yeah.
Yeah. And things like in English, sometimes there's, you'll see something and go, oh, maybe I'll be reading something and I'll be like, oh, there's a kid in my year 10 class I think would really enjoy that. And I'll maybe say to them then, oh, here, do you want to borrow this book? Because I remember my English teacher doing that with me at GCSE. My English teacher, Suzanne Frizzell, lent me Great Expectations. And initially I was like, this is really hard. This book's really difficult. But I loved that she thought, do you know what? I think you can cope with this and I think you'll enjoy it once you get into it. And I just... I was buzzing at that.
And then I would say more than just then, you know, the taking an interest, you know, but it is true, but having clear boundaries also matters. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that might seem as if, you know, you're maybe almost having to challenge the pupil and you worry about, oh, is this going to damage our relationship? But from my experience, fair, clear boundaries and being willing to challenge them when they let you down or whatever, I actually think long term down the line, they have tons more respect for you. So, you know, oh, your hair looks good today, you know, Katie. Oh, did you get your hair done? I mean, I've just got Katie now for the rest of the lesson. She's buzzing because I said her hair was nice. But if Katie forgets her homework next week, I'm still going to call her out on it. And actually, yeah. Katie will respect that because I have an established relationship with her.
Yeah, I think
simple things.
That makes a difference. We're going to pause for 1 second. And when we come back, we are going to look at some of the similarities between you as well. And look at the second part of what I want us to look at tonight is how we can look out for each other more. So we will come back and talk about that in just a sec.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Okay, so we've looked at some of the difference between the two of you as teachers. Now we're going to move on to some of the commonalities shared, despite the fact that it's very different subjects and different stages of your careers and different lengths of time being in the school that you're both in now. And then we're going to touch on how this maybe enables teachers to learn from each other and look out for each other. Because I think, Johnny, you had mentioned earlier, you know, sometimes it's difficult to establish those relationships and those connections with your colleagues. And you know, as teachers, we're so good at encouraging our students to take care of themselves and look out for their mental health and their physical health and share information about how if you look after one, it's good for the other one, but we sometimes neglect that in ourselves. And so one of the things, really, because I know both of you, I know that you both do appreciate the importance of looking after your mental and physical health, but have you ever found that that's difficult to prioritise or balance with school life because time is so precious across the country? Timetables are getting heavier because there are fewer staff or less money to pay enough staff to be in schools, like right across the UK and Ireland, and class sizes just seem to be getting bigger. So have you ever found it difficult to prioritise that or get that balance?
Yes, for the last 14 years, pretty much. And you said there about, you know, as teachers, our role is to, you know, give these young people this advice. And Amanda, if I actually took on board the advice that I dish out, I'd be an amazing person. I mean, half the time in work, I find myself, here's the right thing you should do. And I walk away from it thinking, Johnny, you might want to try that sometime. Yes. Now I have to say, where do I start? Well, the current school I'm in, I feel very blessed. I feel lucky in that, you know, the senior leadership attempt to be as accommodating as possible, you know, when it comes to matters such as these. I'm referring to, listen, sometimes life just happens and you can't be in school, or you need to leave early, or, you know, something just crops up. And when it's connected to how you feel or health or whatever, you know, that trumps everything else and that has to take priority. But you're asking there about, do we tend to put things off or not prioritize our health? And I mean, for me, that's a big yes. And I would say now, maybe because I'm getting older, you know, I do try to avoid falling into that trap now. And I think I would be, I think I would be willing to articulate more now, here, listen, I'm not feeling great, or I need this. But, you know, for me, I feel such, over the years, I felt such a sense of guilt. And it's this idea that I am a teacher, therefore I'm invincible. So, you know, bad things only happen to me during school holidays, you know, term time's off, you know, sorry, it's term time. I can't get sick, or I can't feel this way because it's not half term. It's not Easter. You know, all these things, life just needs to happen for me during the summer. And the fact of the matter is, that's absolutely ridiculous. And then I think putting that level of pressure on yourself actually does more damage. You know, how can you be an effective teacher if you're just constantly sort of putting things off, or just being in a little state of denial about, you know, oh no, this thing's probably nothing, or it doesn't even have to be something serious. You know, we can think about even our general health, fitness, well-being. On one hand, I do think teaching is such a high level of stress and there's such a high workload. You know, obviously, I'll just speak about term time, that I do think it's hard to make time for that. But I will also admit that over the years, I have found it very easy to use the workload of school as an excuse. So it's very easy to, you know, get home and think, oh gosh, I couldn't possibly have time now to go and exercise, or, you know, well, I stayed in school to 5 marking books, you know, that's the day done. Now I've got to go, you know. So I think, you know, I'm willing to admit that over the years, I have found it quite easy to make excuses, and you know, so yeah, it's all about time, really, isn't it? We prioritize everything else above our own health, and you know, over the years, as all of us will, you know, there's tragedy all around us. You know, I can even think of that in terms of some of my own colleagues and some of the things they've gone through or experienced. I've watched some of my colleagues leave the profession because of ill health, stress, anxiety, whatever it might be. And I think I'm at a place now where platitudes aren't good enough. You know, the words are easy. It's all, you know, oh, this reminds us that we've got to put things into perspective, and work is just work, and your health's your wealth, and you've got to look after yourself. Do you know what? That's all true. So what's the action? You know, so I'm actually getting to a point, you know, sometimes I feel frustrated because I think it's all well and good to say that, but let's actually live it. And, you know, we've got to look out for ourselves, and, you know, obviously we've got to look out for each other, but we absolutely have to look after ourselves. And I think in teaching, we have to normalize not feeling 100%. So my answer, yes, is absolutely 100%. It is hard. It's something that I'm really trying to fight against, and that I have very much been trying to change this academic year, but I'm not going to pretend that it's easy. So I have found that hard, very much so.
And what about you, Neil? Have you found it difficult being a beginning teacher? Have you found it difficult maybe to prioritise that work-life balance as well and being able to take care of yourself?
Yeah, I 100% agree with Johnny. I think teaching is probably one of the easiest jobs, you know, to finish up work and then go home and just think I've got all this other stuff to do. I just sort of feel like you could do about 6 hours of work every night and still have another six to do. You know, you could just keep giving yourself. So it's important just to set boundaries. What I've sort of tried to do this year is set time limits on, you know, each thing I'm working on. So say I've got to do some year 14 work and the coursework, I'll set aside an hour and I'll see how much I get done that. If I don't get it all done last time, I'll just move it on to the next day. Try not to overrun those deadlines. And, you know, I think it's also good the way me and Johnny have set aside specific days after school to actually go out and do some running, you know, because we're actually doing training for the marathon. And that's always something I've wanted to do, but I've just never put the time aside to do it. So it's great to actually, you know, put some time aside after school and just do it, you know, get away from the books, get your head out for a while. And it's just been really, really good.
So you're going running on specific days during the week?
Yes, at the minute we've got Monday and Thursday. Johnny probably does a bit more than me, to be fair. He's leaving me behind. But yeah, at least Monday and a Thursday, you know, it's good. Just, you know, once the bell rings at 20 past three, you're going to get out for a bit, you know, for an hour and a half. So it's really, really good.
And you're going straight from school, the pair of you then running. So that's like you don't have the chance to maybe make the excuses, Johnny, that you were talking about before. Bell rings, get changed, and you know Neil's waiting there for you. You
just exactly, to, you know, 100%. And for me, you know, I'm glad I've gotten myself to this place. But for Neil and I to go and do something like that, in my opinion, that is just as like it's just as legitimate, as valid, as important as if, you know, we were sitting behind, you know, in school marking books. In fact, I think it's more important because it lifts the mood. It's good for your health. You know, those are the types of things that actually make you a better teacher. You know, marking 50 more books does not make me a better teacher. Okay, yes, I've got to do it at some point because, okay, my students need feedback. But, you know, we there's this hierarchy and to me, it's almost inverted. It's wrong. You know, for two colleagues to go out and, you know, exercise together or say that this hour of our lives right now, what is more important is that we go and we just do something active. You know, I'm really, really happy that Neil and I are doing that. And I just really hope that people understand and get the importance of it. And you know, there's not a chance I'd rather be sitting doing, you know, work because I've just worked. I've already done my work and the work that needs done, I will get it done and I will get it done at some point. And this stops us, you know, well, me and more Neil, you know, is into football and is a very active person, you know, so more me, to be honest, would be making the excuse. And this is, again, you think back to you asking us about relationships. And so this is something really that's just all come together. And certainly I can say that it's improved my academic year. You know, it's absolutely making it more enjoyable.
So that's making a huge difference then, having Neil there as a colleague. It's, you know, it's led to this that's then helping you.
Oh, without doubt, because you feel sort of friendly pressure. It's good pressure. Mm-hmm. It's, as you said, it's don't want to let someone down or you're maybe feeling really pushed, but you want to keep going. You know, it's all healthy and good. Yeah, it's, I used to run, you know, years ago and have had a bit of a love-hate relationship with it and different things, you know, have pulled me away from it. And I had absolutely no idea, no expectation that I would, you know, that I would get back into it and that I would set targets and goals, you know, to try and run a marathon. You know, I just didn't see that coming. And that's come through work. It's come through getting to know Neil. So happy days, you know, and honestly, you know, I mean, I've never run with someone before. I do things on my own and running is very suited to do on your own, of course. You know, like this isn't, you know, it's something that I've just embraced. And as I said, it's making my school year more enjoyable. So it puts me in a better mood. I feel motivated. You know, you go into school and you feel like you can tackle some of these tasks, you know, that you're waiting on, that are waiting on you. So I think perhaps a lot of people out there underestimate you know, you feel good about yourself or you're engaging in an activity that you really like, it actually can have a transformative effect on the quality of your work, you know. So, yeah.
And Neil, are you finding the same sort of thing then? Are you getting similar benefits out of it to what Johnny was saying?
No, Neil hates it.
You'd rather just run on your own and you've got this old fella running.
Neil's like, bloody hell, I have to wait for him again.
No, you know what? It's the exact same for me. So Johnny sort of motivates me on as well. If I was doing it myself, I'd probably give up, you know. We did a half marathon the other day. There's no chance I would have done that by myself. Yeah. So as I say, it's good friendly competition, you know, keeping each other going, all that kind of stuff. But another thing is it actually gives you a wee bit of time for me to talk to Johnny, you know, about school. Is there any problems I'm having? Is there any questions I need to ask? You know, it's good to have that bit of time after school as well to actually get any questions around off my chest, you know, to someone who's probably went through those problems before. You know, it's likely if I have a problem that Johnny's probably experienced himself before. So it's good that way as well.
Oh, that's brilliant. Then you've got that time whenever you can, and maybe even physically being away from school might help with that too. You know, you're not still sitting in the classroom where you've maybe struggled with something or had a run in with somebody. You know, getting that bit of distance maybe makes it a bit easier to talk.
Yeah, definitely, 100%.
And I'm not looking to extrapolate too much or stereotype or anything, but just in your own experience, do you think maybe it's harder sometimes for male teachers to make those connections with colleagues or maybe even outside school? Because it is a female-dominated workforce and there maybe aren't just the same kinds of opportunities. I'm just thinking, like, Johnny, we've been friends for a really long time. We would not work as running partners.
No, absolutely not.
Apart from the fact that you're about 2 foot taller than me, I would feel under pressure to be trying to keep up with you. You would either have to be going really slowly, going for flips, or, you know, it just wouldn't work. Whereas I know there are other friends who I could be like, okay, so I can meet that one in the evening to go to yoga. I can meet that one to go to Pilates. I can go for a run with these ones because they're all in a range that's more similar to me. I can go to the gym and lift weights with this one. And I'm not saying that men and women can't exercise together. We do. I go to exercise classes and things that are mixed. But in terms of finding those connections in school that we know are so important, do you think maybe sometimes that can be a bit more isolating or challenging for male teachers to find those connections?
I would say perhaps, you know, I want to start by saying, well, most of the staff we teach at an all-girls school, and then most of the staff are women. So, but I have some great relationships with, you know, females in work. Of course I do. You know, you're right. It's not about, you know, oh, men and women, you know, yes. However, you know, are there unique experiences to being female? Yes. That, you know, where I can't so much speak to that or offer something to the conversation, or where perhaps a woman doesn't even want to talk about that in front of me, you know, it happens. And there are unique experiences to being a bloke. Yeah. And, you know, so is there something nice, you know, about being able to connect, you know, with other men? You know, yes, because you know, it's a state of mind. It's, you know, there are just things that we maybe feel or experience that are not the same. So yes, but I think what you're trying to get at is, are we maybe a bit rubbish at that? I suppose I don't need to worry about offending anyone because I am a bloke, so I can say what I want about blokes. I think sometimes it can be hard to, maybe you're afraid of being a little bit vulnerable, or sometimes maybe there can be a bit of depth lacking. You know, it can be quite superficial, because that's just in this. I think that's just an emotional barrier that guys tend to have up more so than women. One thing rather than even gender that I think helps with connecting with Neil is, you know, despite the fact that I'm only ever so slightly older than him, is that, you know, we have similarities in that neither one of us has children. So that actually, yeah, you know, that's actually a big thing. You know, I'm older, so pretty much everybody my age I know has kids. wonderful. I'm delighted for them. But it impacts on your social, it impacts socially. So my guys in work that I talk to, who I'm very, very fond of, just because of life and circumstances, you know, they can't go for a run after school, or, you know, they're just not up for that. It doesn't fit their lifestyle, and that's okay. And I would, you know, but so one thing that's just nice is, despite the fact, you know, I'm older or different stages of our careers or whatever it might be, it doesn't matter, because we're able to make the time to do this. It suits our, you know, it suits our lifestyles, I think is what I'm trying to say. And as Neil said, you know, you're going for a run together, but actually I feel very comfortable, you know, talking about, oh, this happened in work, what do you think about that? Or, you know, to ask a question, you know, it actually has created a space where, you know, you can talk about more than, you know, we don't just go for a run and talk about the grind or the color of our trainers. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's flip sake. It's okay to talk about life. And I actually think that doing something together, you know, actually making the time to do something, I think that is creates an environment conducive to maybe just being able to be like, well, you're all right, you know, you're all right, mate, how are you? And you don't just mean, you know, how are you, and just say okay and move on. Like, it would be totally fine to say, you know what, I'm not great, and that's right, okay, let's talk about that. So I think maybe blokes are a bit rubbish, but I think if you're willing to push through a wee bit, you know, come on, hopefully we've all got friends in our lives, you know. It's comforting, and it's just nice. Human connection is good.
Yes, I would agree with that. That sounds like a good message. Neil, does that resonate with you? Is that what you experience as well?
Yeah, well, 100%. Just the way Johnny was saying there, it's nice to actually talk about something a wee bit more than surface level, you know, especially for blokes, I think. Well, my default whenever speaking to another fella is, you know, just talking about football, you know. So there'll be people, like some of my friends even, that's the only thing we'll talk about, you know. I never really get much deeper than that. That's some people I've known for, you know, 10 years or so. So, like, as I say, it's good to push past that a wee bit, you know, and get to actually talk about things at a more deeper level, as you say. So if there's any bothering you, it's good to have someone to talk about it.
So it just makes that
teaching's weird, because teaching's so strange, because we have all these colleagues, but, you know, I don't see them. I mean, I have people that I work with whom I like, you know, that I haven't seen in about 2 weeks because they're in a different building, or they haven't taken their break when I have, or I've worked through a few lunches, or I like to go out for a walk at lunch and get a coffee. You know, there's no one's at fault, but, you know, sometimes you just don't see people. Or, like, when do you actually get the opportunity to talk? You know, and as I said, if you're doing something during break and you don't take a full lunch, I mean, honestly, there are people I work with that I'd love to know that they're okay, and therefore I should make the time to go and say hello to them. But, you know, teaching can be lonely. I've had days in school where I pretty much haven't spoken to another adult because I've just been in my room teaching my classes, and that is my fault. I shouldn't do that. That's isolating myself a bit. But I eat my lunch in my room, you know, and I could go home and honestly not speak to a single colleague. So, you know, that's not good every day. You can't do that every day. So, I'm just trying to make the point that I do think it's important at times to push yourself a wee bit and to realize that, you know, there are going to be other people in your work and environment that you can connect with, and don't be afraid to reach out.
I think that's important, is that feeling, that allowing yourself, I suppose, to show that vulnerability, like you said earlier, and reaching out. And see, along with that, Johnny, obviously you've been teaching for a good bit longer than Neil. So something maybe that people at the earlier stages of their career don't realise is that there is still at times, and I'm just being for myself, I'm not like trying to project onto you, you might not experience this, but for me, I've been teaching for a long time now, but still would get, especially when it comes to bringing in maybe new types of technology or new innovations, I will get still that imposter syndrome or that sense of self-doubt whenever it comes to bringing in new things. And maybe people at the beginning of their careers need to see at times that we all do still struggle with different aspects of the job, even 14, 15 years in.
100%. And, you know, you said imposter syndrome, buzz term. You know, I'm triggered by you saying that. it's plagued me my whole life, you know, personal life. And then I think a career such as teaching, you know, where it's, I have felt it so keenly in that. I don't even want to ramble too much, but yes, absolutely doubt myself all the time. Have insecurities. You know, I'm ahead of a year, so for example, I would regularly take assembly in school. Do you know? I mean, there are genuinely, and it's so ridiculous, and I talk myself out of it. You know, I could still get a big dose of that even before I stand up and take an assembly. You know, like, you're rubbish. This assembly is going to be terrible. Kids don't even want to listen to what, you know, or, you know, this member of staff took assembly last week and theirs was brilliant and yours is nothing like, you know, it's a horrible thing. And I know that lots of people out there will relate to it. You know, it's, there you go. Yeah, there's something that I think probably Neil and I can both relate to. And you're right, that the age difference or the difference in our teaching service, it doesn't matter. And I do want my message to be a real Debbie Downer, you know.
No, there you go.
14 years later, you still feel anxious. Woo-woo. But the fact of the matter is, it's true, you know, and it's something that I absolutely, I have to actively fight against it. And actually, one thing that does help is talking to other people and sharing it. So yes, imposter syndrome, big style. I mean, you know, I'll let Neil speak here because I'm hoping he's going to validate what I've said, that he's experienced that too.
Unfortunately so, yes. No, yeah, I'm exactly the same, especially last year. As I said, I was the only person in the department, so I had a big sense of imposter syndrome where I just felt like I definitely wasn't up to the job, all these responsibilities, teaching all these different specifications that I hadn't taught myself, just going through all the coursework, all that kind of stuff, just sort of thinking, like, how am I going to be good enough to teach all of these year 14, all that kind of thing, you know? Like, as Johnny said, it's a constant fight against yourself, and I suppose that's one thing I've sort of learned from Johnny, is sort of not to try to take everything like that personally, and sort of try and separate work from home a wee bit as well, because I would have taken that home with me last year a wee bit, to be honest. Like, I told Johnny, there's times at the start of the year I would have woke up at night and thought about all the coursework I had to do and been writing things down about, like, stuff I had to try and remember and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, so you can definitely say I felt the imposter syndrome.
And does that feel a bit better this year?
Oh, definitely.
Good.
Like, there's no way I could have. Last year, there was so much work, you know, just being by myself, as I said. No year could have been as hard, if you know what I mean. So, if I got through last year, I don't think too many years can be as bad. Hopefully.
You really were thrown in at the deep end.
I know. I sort of fast tracked myself, you know. I just wasn't easy enough going in. Sure, I wanted to test myself. So, I think I got about 3 or 4 years experience within 1 year, so was worth it in the end.
Is that why this year you're like, right, well, now I'm going to have to run a marathon because that's the only thing that's going to compare?
I know, it's just too easy this year. It's just not enough going on. So
VP next. VP. Whoop, whoop.
Next month we are interviewing Principal Dylan, though.
It's true. Yeah, you'll ask us. You will. You'll ask us on the show again in a year's time, and I'll have been demoted. And yeah. But see, to be fair, can I just say, I genuinely mean this, I do not believe that I would have coped well starting off with that level of responsibility. You know, even I just think of the administrative aspect of leading a department and you know, just the responsibility. So, you know, I have huge respect for him for that, because I do not know if I could have coped with that.
Oh, absolutely. I can tell you as an absolute certain fact, I would not have coped. So, I think fair play, Neil, that you're still standing and we've still got you in the teaching profession. I'm thinking we should be counting that as an absolute win.
Amanda, you had another guest on a while back who talked about, comparison being the thief of joy. And, you know, that's a big thing from that. If I were to be giving someone, other teachers, advice out there, you know, about feeling insecure or worried or imposter syndrome, you know, but you know, that's also sometimes
a really negative aspect of it. You know, I look around and often I think of colleagues that I have, or even just other people outside of work, and I just perceive them to be so much more confident than I am, to better express themselves, you know, to be more engaging, blah, blah, blah. And I think, oh, that, what, you know, why am I not like that? You know, why am I standing here sweating? I have to get up and I have to talk to people. You know, when I was on, I used to be on SLT and gave that up about a year ago. And, you know, even when I had to speak to staff in that role, now I'm proud of myself that I did it and I always forced myself through, but I honestly would be about to maybe announce something to staff or take an inset thing or whatever it might have been. And, you know, that honestly, that would have nearly killed me, because I would have been thinking, you know, these people are looking, I mean, people I know, so people I know and like, but I would have, in my head, it would have been, these people are looking at me thinking, what on earth is this guy talking about? Look, you know, it is an awful thing. And I've probably never spoken about it as much publicly as I am right now. But there's no point in not speaking very candidly. But that's the type of thing. And you can't compare yourself to other people. And I think you got to share how you feel, because you might even find somebody else has felt that way. Or that person might even just give you a bit of affirmation that sometimes you need to hear. You know, I have tortured myself over the years just with self-doubt. And it's, yeah, it's, anyway, it's a battle.
Yeah. Neil, does that surprise you, hearing that from Johnny? Is that something that you would have realized, maybe, that he also experienced that level of self-doubt?
No, definitely not, to be honest. Like, any time I've been walking past Johnny's classroom, I can hear him shouting about some poetry or something like that. you definitely wouldn't get that sense of feeling. So to know that, obviously I feel that I'm in my second year teaching, to know that a teacher who's been teaching for 14 years feels the same challenges as me, you know it's quite comforting, you know.
Yeah.
Yes. So that's what I mean. I don't want the message to be, this is like the opposite. This is
never going to go away.
This is the opposite of the "it gets better" message. Mine is "it doesn't get better." Sorry.
But we're saying it does get better if you talk about it.
Yes, it does.
So it is healthy. We're going to have one final pause here, and when we come back, we're going to think about really what are the main sorts of things that you think you've learned from each other, and what maybe challenges or things you're looking forward to moving ahead. So we'll be back with that in just a sec.
This show is brought to you in partnership with John Catt Educational, publishing professional development books and resources to support great teaching and learning in schools around the world. Have you checked out their latest releases? Use the code JCTTR2324 for 20% off your order. Don't miss out. Visit johncattbookshop.com to explore their full range of titles and advance your own professional development today. Happy reading.
Okay, so we are flying through our time tonight. It's absolutely flown. We have a little bit of time left, and yeah, I guess really what I was hoping we could do at the end was see if there's anything that you want to come back to, anything that either one of you has said that the other one wants to pick up on, or is there anything that you want to say to anybody? Well, Johnny, you've already kind of spoken about, you know, people who might currently be finding things tough, or what you've learned from each other, really.
Okay, so what you're saying is I'm going to have to compliment Neil in some shape or form.
Well, I mean, that would be nice. Yeah.
No, to be serious. Yeah, I suppose, you know, we're colleagues. Neil's new, so to speak. You know, doing his EPD, sort of Northern Ireland's version of, like, CPD, really, isn't it? Your professional development and all that. Already, you know, so Neil has educated me somewhat in technology, which I touched upon earlier. You know, I've maybe been burying my head in the sand. And I really respect and am grateful for the fact that he's actually given up a bit of his time already to very gently introduced me to some concepts. He did a wee session at lunchtime actually once, and a few of us all went to it. He recently was just showing me some wee things about a program called Canva. You know, this is all trying to bring bits of like AI into your classroom. And one thing that I was really grateful about was he didn't make me feel like an idiot. So I really appreciate that. Also, for someone who's only in their second year of teaching, who's, you know, carrying a lot, who's just come from a year of being, you know, middle manager in your induction year. I mean, what even is that? But Neil is so composed and calm. Like he's very chill, as the kids would say. And it's funny because I can't imagine him flapping about. Whereas I think when I was in my second year of teaching, I was just flapping about, you know, just flapping, just always like at a high level of sort of anxiety, like, ugh. But to me, I look at Neil, and I don't want this to sound patronizing in any way, and please, that is not my intention. But, you know, he just seems to get on with it. And I find that so impressive. He's just cool, calm, collected. And also what he's carrying is he's trying to really push his subject, ICT, in a girls' school. You know, he's talked to me about, you know, he of course he does. He wants to see as many kids as possible doing his subject at GCSE and A-level. And so I have a lot of respect for him that way, yeah.
I can see as well with a message in from Erica who says, I've been teaching for 30 years and Neil has taught me lots. So there you go.
Oh, see?
An impact everywhere.
So I'm not, I, there you go. I didn't just make that up, see?
No, you didn't. Neil, how'd you feel hearing that?
I struggle to think that I will be able to teach Eric Luke. And if I am ever able to teach Eric Luke something, I think I'll retire on that day. So it's nice to hear anyway. So, yeah, but just what I've learned from Johnny in the short time that I've known him is, I sort of already touched on earlier, just don't take everything personally, because that was one thing that I used to do quite a lot. I think teachers sort of have to hold up a mirror to themselves and try and not take everyone personally, you know, because if I have a problem where I'm stressed at a certain time of year, like this year is a bit of a pinch point, as people say, with reports and exam prep and all that kind of thing, It's probably likely another teacher is feeling the same way. So the best way to go about that is go and have a conversation with them. That's what I'm able to do with someone like Johnny, you know. So as I say, a problem shared is a problem halved. So it's just good to have that kind of relationship with someone in school to be able to share your problems with. And as I said, if I have a problem, it's probably likely Johnny has the same problem, or he's experienced a similar problem in his 14 years of teaching. And I have to say, Johnny's been very, very good to me. Obviously, I'm a new teacher. Sometimes when you're new in the door, you don't really want to upset people and all that kind of things. And as Johnny was saying earlier, sometimes you don't want to talk to people as much because you think they might not want to talk to you, and you want to be bothering them, all that kind of thing. But Johnny's been really, really good to me.
I think that's important to flag up as well, is that sometimes the teachers who have been there for a long time might not realise that teachers who are new in might want to ask questions or might want to come to them and talk through things. And it's important to have that welcoming open door and maybe start those conversations.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, I feel like, and because school is so busy, trust me, I understand why it's difficult, but the onus is really on the established teachers who are already there to welcome other people. And, you know, it shouldn't be a new person's job to kind of, I don't know, walk around and find someone to talk to. You know, we all have a responsibility to welcome people. When I was a senior teacher, part of my role was to kind of look after student teachers and teachers in their induction and EPD, you know, all that jazz. So I think maybe it's just more at the forefront of my mind, but I just remember what it was. For me, it's just empathy. Go back to what it was like for you.
Yeah.
You know, I was bricking it every day in my PTC, going in feeling just so embarrassed about things, you know, trying to strike up a conversation. Oh, so socially awkward. So I just think, you know, you said earlier about, you know, we give kids all this advice, you know, and we need to follow it. You know, how it's really not hard to be kind, and it's really not hard to show another human being a level of compassion. And sometimes in the sort of hustle and bustle of school, you know, maybe just forget those simple things, you know, just to be kind. And you know, you're not going to be mates with everybody in work. I mean, that's not a normal situation either. You know, it's not about being best mates with everyone. It's just about, you know, it's just about communication and letting somebody know you're there. And, you know, we can just, it's just so easy to get wrapped up in work that you sort of lose sight of things like that. But
do you know that it was whenever I was doing a self-evaluation, a sort of audit thing for a course I was doing, and one of the questions was asking you to rate yourself on all these different things, and one of them was on how approachable you are. You know, are you approachable? Would you help someone out if they came up to you, or someone had a problem, would you help them out? And I went to score myself highly for that, because I would like to think if anybody came to me with an issue, then of course I would like to take the time to help them. And then I thought about it for a second and I thought, well, hang on, how did they know that? How would someone who was new to the school I'm in know that they could come to my door and ask me anything? And it was after COVID, where, you know, the staff rooms, you couldn't gather in staff rooms, you couldn't have, you know, more than however many people all together in one place. So we'd all got used to spending our breaks and lunches all like in our classrooms, or two people together here and three people together over there. And I thought, you know what? I don't go to the staff room anymore. And if I don't go to the staff room, people don't know who I am. I mean, and one of my roles is literacy coordinator. And I thought, what if a new member of staff comes in and they have a question about literacy? They won't know who I am. They won't want to come to my door and ask me a question because they've never clapped eyes on me before. And it was a bit of a shock, because I do like to think that I'm quite friendly and approachable, but I hadn't been actually consciously setting out to go and make connections with new members of staff. And realizing that, I then thought, right, we're going to have to do something about that. I realized there were people in the teaching staff, I didn't even know their names. I was horrified. How on earth, Amanda, how can you think that you're approachable when you haven't even gone and introduced yourself and learned that person's name yet? So that was a bit of a wake-up call for me, and I'd like to think that maybe now I'm better at it than I was there a couple of years ago, but that was a bit of a wake-up call for me. So I think, Johnny, you're bang on whenever you say, look, it is the role of the established teacher there to make it clear that people can come and talk to them, rather than, as you say, someone new to the school having to go round to figure out who it is they can speak to.
Yeah. And I mean, I'm not saying, you know, that it has to be really pushy, because I will admit, whether it's a good or a bad thing, it's me. And you know, I do like my own company, and I can be a bit of an island sometimes. And I you know, I choose to be alone a lot. And I'm not going to get in. I don't need to go any deeper on that. But I think that's okay, because I would want that boundary to be respected by people. It doesn't mean that there's anything wrong with me. It doesn't mean that I'm upset. I just sometimes don't want a lot of people around me, or, you know, I'm trying to make a point that you can still be friendly and welcoming, and you can still just let someone know that you're there without crossing a boundary. Does that make sense? You know, I'm not saying that it's about turning up. You know, I don't know, knocking on Neil's door and turning up with a picnic. Hiya, let's go. You know, that's not what it's about. It's just quite simply letting a member of staff know that you're there, that you can talk to me if you ever need help. You know, it's just something like that, because I also very strongly believe in respecting people's boundaries, and we're all different. Yeah. And some of us like to socialize more than others. So I think it's possible to respect someone's boundaries, but just let them know that you're there. That's what I would say.
And Neil, does that sound right by you? Does that kind of correlate with your experiences? Or
yeah, definitely. Like, I think Johnny's probably one of the first people to speak to me in the staff room. I remember just sort of asking me about what I was doing the previous year, all that kind of thing, and just asking about how I get on and talking about EPD and all that kind of stuff. So it was really, really good just to strike up a conversation with someone so early on, and just sort of set my nerves a wee bit at ease. So yeah, thanks, Johnny.
You're welcome.
Right, well, I'm going to continue on this theme and thank both of you. I really, really appreciate you coming on tonight, and I really appreciate how open and honest you have been in this conversation. And I just think that that's been it's been great for me to hear. I hope hopefully others will be able to get something out of it as well. But I think it's really good to hear about some of the similarities and the challenges that people face throughout, and also looking at how we can look out for ourselves a bit more and look out for each other along the way, and how that can really make a difference, hopefully, for teachers. So thank you both, really. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. And we will finish up here.
Yeah, thanks for having us.
Okay. Thanks very much. I'll hopefully speak to you again soon, and hopefully you'll listen to some more. And that's us then for tonight for the Sunday Late Late Show. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and to those who were leaving messages. I'm sorry we didn't get through to all of them, but thank you so much for your contributions. And enjoy the next show. Thanks. Bye.
You've been listening to Teachers Talk Radio. Tune in live and listen back at ttradio.org. We look forward to hearing from you next time on Teachers Talk Radio.